So tell me how shutting down streets in the 90s and 2000s to have a drag race is any different than the street takeovers that we're having now, where they're shutting down.
And here's something there.
Well, I just want to know. I mean,
all right. No, all right.
I've seen Fast and Furious, and I know that it's got to be the exact same thing, right?
Not even close. I think the biggest difference between street takeover stuff and what maybe happened in the late 90s and early 2000s has everything to do with the fact that we were trying to not be seen, and they are trying to be all over social media, inexposed. It's almost like they're in a position where they're saying, hey, look, we're going to shut down this area. We're going to do whatever hood stuff we want to do, and there's nothing you can do about it. And we just wanted to be able to run our cars, right? We just wanted to be able to show. Look, for us, I think if I'm going to get a little psychology-like, I believe that there was a lot of like status there, right? When the people that were the fastest on the street or fastest in your area, they like had a lot of street cred. They had a lot of points, right? So
was this like the Oklahoma City, you had the guy at the top that was the fastest and then you had people under them?
I don't want to overinflate it, and I also don't want to make it seem like we wrote down and kept a list, right? Like every night was its own adventure, right?
Gotcha.
Or every outing was its own adventures. And usually I think some nights were very much like a street fight. What I mean by that is
you can't say that if we're talking about takeovers, because that actually happened.
Let me rephrase that. I think some nights were more like a boxing night.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is like there was, a few races that were the big dollar races where they actually were going for money, and there was a big pot put together, and there were people, betting on these races, and like, they was the people that they've been, for a few weeks, you've been heard in the crap talking, going back and forth. And it was this guy versus this guy. He's going to bring a car. And then they're going to argue for an hour and a half in front of everybody.
For a half a car lane.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is like, so what does it look like then? Right.
Yep.
So for an hour and a half, when you had some of these types of races, there would just be people talking, sitting on their cars, hanging out. Streets would be lined with people BSing, do whatever. And these dudes straight up would be standing near the starting line just yelling at each other. And their crews would be there and they'd be like, nah, like that's BS. Like you can't do it like that. You got to do it like this. Okay. So there was definitely nights where you had the quote unquote, the main events that people went there for. Sometimes before and sometimes after, there'd be some cars that would click off some runs and stuff like that to go against each other, some more grudge match stuff. Okay. Sometimes it was camaraderie stuff, like just like you run your stuff, you run your boy, whatever it was. So there's a level of that. But I think that the big difference is that as messy, and I'm not saying everybody, and I'm not saying every situation, right? Because I can only speak for Queens, New York, Lower New York, Long Island, that whole thing. Okay. I don't want to get into saying like I know a lot about the West Coast, drag racing scene. I don't want to get into saying like, oh, I know how, Oklahoma does their thing with the street outlaws. Like it's not my scene. I can't tell you. And I also wasn't one of the fastest ones out there. So it's a different appearance, right? Like I had areas where things would I would run and be involved in things.
Allegedly.
But in Mexico. But what I mean is it wasn't like it was always that. Because I spent more, I probably have drag raced way more in a track setting, right? But I also was one of those guys that was like, I worked so hard to put money into my car and barter and figure out all the ways to get this car to be fast that it was everything to me.
And now, was the Eclipse?
This was my 2G Eclipse, right? Okay. So I felt a lot of risk, and to basically pivot and be like, oh, I'm going to take this thing and risk getting it impounded.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of times I would go with other friends. I mean, there was a few times that particularly something was set up where I was like, whatever. And the car would find its way to certain places. Right. But, but with that said, I think if, really from an abstract point, most of the things that I had witnessed, they were in industrial areas, and people would do it at night, you know, because there was nobody in an industrial area.
Yeah.
And they would do their best to, you know, I remember, you know, especially with all the Nextels. I mean, Nextels were a huge thing for this, right?
Well, all you'd hear is, where are you at? Where are you at?
Talk to your friends, talk to the guy down the street. You'd be able to, you know, like a lot of these, you know, events, they wouldn't even do. It's not that there wasn't certain spots that were hotter than others. It's just that you wouldn't know what time it was going to, where it was going to be, how it was going to be. And that was all, you know, by design. Like it wouldn't happen until people were ready to go to run, or until you know, somebody had put a time on it so that it was always a guessing game kind of thing for certain other people that might be roaming the area.
Now, obviously, this is to cut down, you know, in the industrial area, cut down on law enforcement. Now, was there ever a time?
But where... mostly it was to get away from the public.
Okay, was there ever a time though where that kind of led to a bad situation where the police came in and shut it down? Did you ever have one of those instances?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any that you can share? Because I don't want to know the way you laugh about it. I would want to know that story.
There's got to be a statute of limitations on things, right? Like, yeah.
I'm sure you're okay. So, they're not watching.
Listen,
they're not watching.
Let me start out by saying that I think that it's a super dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I think we all can look back and make, you know, kind of, we can look back and we can think about things that maybe we had different perspective on as we get a little bit older.
Yeah.
Look, it's not something that I would condone. It's not something that we condone. Like street racing is not something that should happen any longer. And I think it's really difficult because I think so many tracks have closed that it really leaves a lot of enthusiasts and people almost without any need to flex and kind of exercise this thing that they want to do so badly.
Yeah.
So I think that puts some people at a disadvantage. But what I will say is there were some times that especially as it got later into this whole drag racing thing, I think the Fast and the Furious for me, and I think for a lot of other people, as much as it was a great movie, and it was for us, it was the first time I can ever really remember feeling like those dudes are us. And I don't mean us like as in like we felt like them. I just mean like it was the first time I remember really watching a movie and being like, that culture that's on that screen is... it's supposed to be for us.
I remember coming out of the movie theater with my friend at the time. And
it was like,
these are my people. This is what I want to do. This is the people I want to surround myself. Like, this was the culture.
The worst thing about going to see a Fast and Furious movie
was the 15-year-old in the movie theater? Because that was me.
No. Was trying to leave the movie theater. Because it has to be the equivalent of like going into Brooklyn and having everybody go watch Rocky. They come out and they're kicking each other's ass.
Everyone's doing burnouts. Everyone's freaking
eating. The parking lots, people. I mean, it was chaos. But it was the first time. But the Fast and the Furious to me came with a little bit of a double-edged sword because for the people that had already had this, you know, street racing culture that was going on for a while, when that movie came out, it was like just flip the lights on and basically say, you know, like all these people that all of a sudden didn't have fast cars, whatever, they all wanted to do the same thing. It almost put a glamour to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it muddied the waters to the point where it really caused crackdowns to happen hard and fast. And so I can remember.
Was it Fast and Furious?
That's not funny. I got roped into that one. But look, you know, like I remember being in an industrial area and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we see this tractor trailer pulling across. Now, the reason this was odd was because the one thing about this group, besides being trying to get as far away from the public as possible, was because it was about the racing. It wasn't about hood stuff, right? It wasn't about trying to cause any issues or drama. Nobody wanted that, yeah. Right? But what ended up happening was people were pretty good about going down, streets, any side streets, it would be anywhere close, parking a car across it. Now, there was no traffic. There was nobody there, okay? Industrial areas are known for people that go to work during work time, but there's no other, you know, through traffic at all otherwise.
Pretty quiet place on a Saturday night.
Dead, right? That probably changes nowadays with Amazon mentalities. I think they, people are shipping, but like, yeah. But like back then,
there was nothing. There was
like that, right? So basically what ends up happening is, you know, a lot of these things were street off, and with the next tells, everybody knew, all right, there's going to be a car coming. Like it was, you know, for not really being planned, it was pretty planned.
It was
like,
well organized.
Yeah, it kind of was, right? And I think it was just a repeat thing of like nobody ever wanted anything to happen, because then we were always worried not only about what would happen and what could happen, but also the idea of like, well, if one thing does happen, we're never going to be able to do this again.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody wanted it to happen. So anyhow, so bottom line is all of a sudden we see a tractor trailer coming, and the weird thing for us was like, that's weird. Like, that street shouldn't even be open. Right? So then you hear all the people, boop, boop, boop. Y'all, nobody run. They're trying to keep everything down. And all of a sudden, you look behind us, and there's another tractor trailer coming in from behind us. And it kind of does one of these wide sweeping turns across the lane, like it's going to go then and
back up.
But it doesn't. And then the next tells just go, I remember the rain just started going nuts. People start fleeing everywhere. The cars, you know, like, and tearing over things. Now you can't go out that way. You can't go back. And now, you know, most industrial areas don't have like a lot of streets in between. So like people are trying to, you know, take 2.5-inch from the ground cars and go through things like woods and over curbs. And, you know, you see people in the back, they're looking for used pallets to stack these as a ramp. I mean, like, we're just, I mean, it was chaos. I mean, I remember this dude with a Civic, and he like tried to get away by going through the woods, and he's like going through the woods, but then the trees got too close and he had to like leave the Civic, and then they just started running, and you're like, where are they going?
If that was you, tell us in the comments. We want to hear.
Yeah. If you were doing a Civic. But ultimately what happens is the cops closed that thing off with two tractor trailers, came in, wrote everybody spectators tickets. You know, if you had your car there, they wrote every single thing on your car. You had a dozen tickets. You got wrecked. You know, if they caught anybody that was running, or if the car was running, or if you were sitting, you know, reckless endangerment, they towed cars out. You know, anybody that, I mean, obviously they would go through if anybody warrants or different things. And I'm sure that that's why there was more than a few people that were running and ditching or whatever they were going to do. But, you know, bottom line is, you know, those things start happening more frequently. And obviously it did get very, very, very closed down. And, you know, look, I mean, there was different nights. Like I said, you know, there was the boxing nights, right, where you would basically know that there was a few high-end events, a few high-end races that people have been, you know, S-talking about for a bunch of time. And then all of a sudden it was like, all right, these dudes are finally going to go at it. So they get there, and then they would argue for you know, an hour and a half while we're all standing there waiting for them, you know? And then they run, and then there would be all the reasons that the other one didn't win, and they'd have to run. You know, there was that. And you have a few of those matches. Maybe a couple races would click off in between just from people talking or whatever it is. But for the most part, you know, then you had other nights where people would just be running and running and running and running. And, you know, I really think, you know, that period taught me just so much about cars. Like, you learned what made cars fast, what didn't make cars fast. You watch cars that had a lot of money in them not be fast. And you realize that the cars, that, you know, like some of these dudes from Trinidad and like the guys that were in Brooklyn and stuff like that, these guys, their cars look like crap. And I don't mean exterior-wise. They looked okay, I guess, so exterior-wise. But, like, you would look at the engine bay, and it was like, you were like, what is this stuff? Couldn't even tell. I mean, remember, this is back in the day where, like, you're building boost controllers with brass fittings and springs and ball bearings and, you know.
Making your first click-type boost controller out whatever. Of spare parts,
you
right?
You got hoses and, you know, whatever. But, like, these dudes would bring cars that you would be like, what is this piece of crap? And the thing was stupid fast. It really, really taught you something, that there was a craft. Of course, there's a craft to building really clean cars. And then there's this other skill set that's about knowing what parts will make a car fast and getting it tuned and dialed in, because you didn't need a million horsepower to do some of these things. You needed, cars to get light. You needed to have a really a well-balanced car. You had a turbo that was in the right efficiency lanes. Don't put something on the car that's not going to spool up to 6,000 RPM, because the truth is, by 6,000 RPM, you don't have enough gear.
Those turbos spooled very slow back then. I don't think people realized that. Those things took forever to spool up on a good day. So
yeah.
Lag was a real, problem for a lot of the smaller engines, especially, coming from DSMs, I'm sure you can attest to it. You go with the inefficient turbo on that, the thing's a slouch. You're not even going anywhere.
Yeah. The journal bearing stuff was a little bit slower to spool. When the first time I started to get, it was like, all right, I went to a 16G, a big 16G, then it was an Evo 16G, then, was it an Evo 16G? Well, big 16G. There was another 16G that I had. Then I remember one of my friends had taken off his 18G and I ran that. Didn't really feel like there was much difference there. I remember the first time that I actually bought a 20G. I put a 20G in my car. And that's when I was like, oh boy. Like that's when that, I remember going 12.2 with that. And that was the first time I remember thinking like, wow, we're doing something here. But when I made the jump from, I went from a 20G to a 60-1.
Okay.
And when I made that jump up to a 60-1, that legitimately was a big turbo. This big.
That's a front mount. They turn that one, right?
We did a stock location.
Okay.
And I remember thinking like, oh my God. And that was a journal bearing turbo, but, I really was able to get some good power to that. My car made 500 all wheel on that turbo, which back then was a fair amount of power.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, whew, like this is, we're really starting to play with some things. Cause when you see the size of the inlet and the inlet's, almost, 4 inches, it's a 4-inch inlet. Like that's a big wheel.
Yeah.
Right. And then from there, I really started to get into the Force Performance stuff, right? Like I remember speaking, I doubt he knows me anymore, but like Robert from Force Performance, I remember I bought, I think I had a 3065, which was one of their first ball bearing, I don't want to say first, but it was one of their bigger ball bearing stock frame size kind of thing, turbos. And that was amazing. And then they ended up coming out with a turbo, if I remember correctly, it was a 3575. And that was lightning. That turbo was like, it spooled up fairly quick for what it was. Like I would think I was, fully all in by about 4,500 RPM, which was amazing, especially since we were dual valve spring. Like we did build those motors. So we were revving to 9,500, 9,000, 9,500, I think. First gear, I would do 90. First gear after I launched, I would go to 9,500 because if I didn't let it sit up there for just a hair, when I went to second, I didn't have enough wheel speed and I would bog.
Yep.
And then after that, I was shifting like 92, 92, 92. But man, it was one of those things where like, you were just starting to get to the point where these turbos were getting, and I remember when I sold my car, I think the car made, I think it's hard now. I have like a skewed memory a little bit, but like, I believe the car was making just south of 700 horsepower all wheel, depending on which dyno you went to. But like, for the most part, I think 675 all wheel was the last Dynodynamics dyno that I had used, before I had sold the car. And I remember we did some stuff after that and I knew the car was faster, but I didn't know how much faster. But man, that was it, and in between there was you started to see the ball bearing, GT35s and GT35Rs and stuff like that. And man, the culture, it was pretty crazy. This is the time where, you had cars that, we just saw the first WRX, for the US. Like we were just seeing, back then if you wanted an STI, the only thing that you had was the dudes that were taking the RSs and doing the STI swaps with them.
On the GCs.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
So the cars that were out there running were were, you know, a lot of, it was DSMs. You know, you started to see some MR2s, like especially the MR2 turbos. You just started to see, you know, the MRS. You know, those were slow, but there was a couple people. One that actually ended up turning into a shop. I don't want to name names, but he had a really well built, fast, you know, MRS. The thing was, you know, turbo, you know, really good. And you know, and you would see, you know, a lot of Civics, a lot of CRXs. Most of those were B series. Most of the fast ones were B series turbo. Those were hit or miss just because a lot of those guys weren't at the time. B series was pretty prevalent. They weren't really building engines. So you had a fair amount of engine fatalities. Like those things would just, when it was time for them to go, they left the chat.
I mean, even as I got older, I went to Honda Day 1 year, and I would say every other pass, a car was blowing up on the track. They run them at such a high level at that point that it's a ticking time bomb in a lot of cases, sadly.
Yeah, well, and I also think, you know, the people were bolting a lot of parts on and just giving it the most amount of abuse possibly gave it. Yeah. But, you know, this is the first thing, you know, a couple of years later, we started to see the Evos come out, but they were pretty expensive. So when you saw a dude show up with an Evo, it wasn't probably till like 2006, 2007, 2008 that you really started to see those people put a lot of money and then them find their way to that same scene, right?
Gotcha.
But man, you know, it was an interesting time. I mean, learned a lot, right? Learned how to keep my mouth shut when I couldn't back it up. Learned not to, you know, overstate certain things. Learned not to feel that I can just run my mouth and not have to. It's hard. It's like these are lessons that, like, you know, you think, oh, they're so obvious, but then I look around sometimes and I'm just like, it's crazy.
I think so. When I was coming up, we called them the OGs, and it was the guys that had been doing the street racing or around the car scene for a long time. And I feel like they kind of molded us. They told us kind of like, hey, cut it out. Hey, you know, this led by example in a lot of cases, or if we did start acting up or anything that seemed to kind of blow up the spot or cause any issues, they were the first ones to come over and be like, hey, cut it out. And you respected that because they've been there and part of that scene for so long that they knew what was appropriate and what wasn't. And I feel like one of the disconnects, and I think we've had this conversation before, there was a breakdown when they really cracked down on car culture, and when the quote unquote takeover culture started, there was nobody that checked that our younger generation said, hey, that's not the right thing to do. This isn't.
I just don't know that I think that the street takeover people majority are car people. Just because they have cars that have a few modifications on them, or they're lowered, or they run those lights, or I just don't know that I think. I think their goal is completely different. I think their goal is to go out and almost thumb their nose at people, basically saying we can do whatever we want and we will. And I don't believe that those people are necessarily. I'm not saying that there's not ever car enthusiasts or people that like cars watching, because it's like I can understand how, like, well, it's kind of mesmerizing a little bit, like. But like I don't believe that the people that are really doing that stuff are necessarily hardcore car people on the whole. I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen, but I really just don't. I don't believe that. Like I don't believe that that's what car people do. Car people don't get in their 300 C's and 300, you know, whatever, and they don't get in their, you know, their chargers and some different things with some red lights on them and go do donuts in the middle of the place and like hang out the windows and like it's not my experience that's what car people are. And just because you drive a car doesn't make you a car person, right?
True.
But that's my take on it. I just don't think that they're the same things. And then, you know, with drag racing, as it got to a point where there were tracks, you know, we found ourselves there more and more and more and more. Then we started to see all the tracks close.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really the disparaging movement. You know, shout out to the people at, you know, for around here, Long Island Needs a Dragway, because they all have been working so hard. And one of my friend Mike's is a real good supporter of that organization. And you know, shout out to those people for
they put on a pretty good event. I mean, I've been out there for 2 years now. I go out.
Have you run out there?
No, I haven't ran out there because I'm not going to take the daily and the Z's down.
Yeah, well,
I'm not nowhere anywhere. But spectating yet again, I take the kids. We make a day out of it. Get some stuff from the food truck, and it's a great little event. Like, don't get me wrong, it's 8th mile, and I'm used to a quarter mile. But it's still getting out there for the day. It's still breathing in motorsports and having a good time. And they've also started doing drag racing at that same at that same facility a little further down. And that's always been a
drifting
good...
or drift racing?
Drifting. Sorry.
So you're... I always struggle with the word racing.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, they do tandems and stuff out there, but yes, it's not for points or any standings or anything like that. But they're out there doing it, and that's Long Island Drift. And I got to tell you, you know, it's a great experience. And to be able to take my kids to those things and have it be safer, let's say, you know, than standing on the side of a road as a car passes you.
Yeah, I mean, I would have never taken my kids there.
No, I get that. And I'm saying that being able to share the passion that I have for cars with them in a safe environment, I think is something that is...
And that's how we felt about the tracks.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so devastating to know that, like, there's none around. And then it's like, all right, well, so we're going to take all these things away and we don't want you to do this. And I'm not saying just for me. I'm talking about for a whole generation of people that, like, this is... You know what they do. It would be, you know, to me, it's like, you know, tell people that you don't like the fact that they're playing soccer. Take all the soccer fields away and then tell them not to kick the ball. Right. I think it's really difficult. So, but there's that. And I think that, but you know, the thing about drag racing that I don't think, you know, and I think a lot of people, especially Vinny Ten, you know, which we're friendly with, that, you know, we've had so many conversations about this, you know, a lot of people would say drag racing died or is dead. And I think Vinny would be the first person to pop up and say, it's not dead. It's there. It's just, you know, it's just different. And he would say, you know, it's still, there's still a strong demand for it and people still want to do it. And I think there's a lot of truth to some of that. But I just think that, you know, everybody's really stuck on what its pinnacle was and that's changed. But the culture is very, very different in drag racing from, let's say, drift or time attack or some of these other motorsports. I don't know if it's too much of a New York thing. I don't think so. Because I've been to other tracks, like you said, MIR, or, you know, we've been down to OSW or different things like that. And there's this level of, you know, just all out. You know, these dudes are tougher dudes.
Yeah.
You know, they tend to be a little bit more scrappier. They're a little quicker on the uptake. They don't really take a lot of crap from people, and I think everybody knows it. So it either is a really, you know, everybody's kind of doing their own thing kind of event, or there's a lot of drama, right?
Hmm.
But you realize who you can trust very quickly. I think you also realize, you know, who's really a good person, who's not, because it's very quickly that you start to get a lot of those interactions that happen, and you're kind of like, ah, that dude's, you know, whatever. But they're different. They're just different scenes. You know, drifting is very camaraderie, hug, you know, like, let me help you, I'll help you, you do this. And that's great. I really like that about drifting. Drag racing, to me, was always very clicky.
Yep.
These are your groups, you know what I mean? If you're friendly enough or you have some connections, sometimes you'll find the people that can float between groups, and that's cool. But, I don't know. They're just different cultures.
And I think it's a different type of competitiveness that as you're letting to, like, the camaraderie and drifting. You're both out there. You're putting on, I don't want to say a show, but you're working together to put down the best run possible. Because if you have a bad lead, you can't chase it. If the chase driver overshoots, he's going to hit you and cause you to have a bad run or damage the car, things like that. Drag racing, you're next to each other and you're door to door, and your job is to beat the guy next to you no matter what it takes without breaking the rules.
And as much as you're battling and drifting, I still believe that there is a hardcore difference between a race and drifting.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is like, you know, with points and different things like that, and that's there with drifting. Like, I get it. The competitiveness is still there with drifting.
Dancing.
I even think it's way more skillful than that. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there is something about racing, whether you're on a track doing time attack or you're drag racing, where it's so definitive. I mean, it's who gets there first.
Yeah.
right? It's who does it in a least amount of time. You know, bracket racing, whatever, that's for some people. But I'm saying, like it's just so black and white. Yeah. Either you made it or you didn't.
Yeah,
like,
either you won or you didn't win. 100%. Simple as that. There's 100%.
No
outcome.
There's no drama with that. You know, people will say, oh. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, short of a few different types of incidences, most of the time, either you had it or you didn't. You know, and it didn't matter if your car was faster and you drove it like crap. You drove it like crap, so you lost.
But right? If you win, you win. You know, at the end of the day, it's very fine. Now, the question is that everyone has at home, of course, is a chase a race?
Is it a chase or race?
So if the lead car jumps,
I know what you mean.
I was gonna say, why am I telling you? Like, you haven't done this before.
Yeah, I mean, in a street sense, it was right.
Yeah, that's so. I always ask because that's always been the hot topic. Is he jumped this, that, and the other thing. But I've always come up with the school of thought of if your tires move, you're part of that race. Simple as that. So if the other guy jumps, you start to roll.
There is this other thing. And this is where the most amount of drama, I think, would happen, where is you have a situation like that and the other guy does go. And he goes because he knows, well, there's money on this. And if they say, no, nobody jumped and you didn't go, you were fighting for that. But then you come back and try to get another run. And most of the time, I think... most of the time, after a lot of crap talking, there would have, you know, an hour would go by.
And then we'll run it again. We'll race it again. Let's
eventually
go.
Eventually, some dude like, all right, you know what? You think you're so fast? You think you could do it? We'll run it again.
Yeah.
You know? I guess if you really feel that adamantly that it didn't work for you, like, you wouldn't go, right? Mm-hmm. But it didn't mean anything, man. Like, a judgment call. And here's the thing. Like, you know, there's been a few incidents where I've been privy to that, like, you know, some dudes, you know, crossed the line and get messed up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. So don't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, things have changed obviously a lot. I still don't, you know, whether there's a lot of that exists or not, you know, I don't believe that it's nearly at the same type of thing. People are, you know, just differently. I think that, you know, times have changed. What people are willing to tolerate has changed. Like, it's nothing else. It's no different than when your parents talk about how they used to be able to drink at 18 and then they would drive around. They didn't, you know, they never used seatbelts. I mean, like, have you ever looked at the first car seats? It was like a metal tube frame and a piece of cardboard. You know, this is the car seat. Like, that was going to stop nothing. So I don't know. It's interesting. I'm curious to see what the people out there think. Yeah. What do you think about the whole street racing / street takeover thing? Are they the same? Aren't they the same? What are the things that make you think, that's what I'm saying?
Oh, right? My gosh.
Yeah, like, that's got you, right?
Yeah, that's safe.
Yeah, put your kid in that. You might as well just tinfoil them to the seat.
Yeah, just put a strap across the chest.
100%.
Fine. It'll be fine.
So, but, you know, like, so what do people think out there? How do you feel about some of this stuff? You know, were you around in the drag racing heyday, we'll call it? What were the cars that you used to run? What kind of times did you used to run if you went to the track? Turbo cars, DSMs, let us know. Curious to hear what your experience is like on some of this stuff. So that's it, right? We're getting out of here?
We're good.
We're out. All right, catch you later.
Peace.